Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is May 26th, 2017, and this is GameBuoy.org video game podcast episode 138, News Buddies.
Oh my god, is that like a new entry in the Air Buddies franchise?
You know what? Let's go with that. I was gonna make a Misfits reference, as is my way. And doing a little bit of research, I don't know that I want to anymore. So welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're doing another one of our looks at current events in the gaming sphere. So please look forward to that. But before then, we have a few of our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy McWaggy, you want to get us going?
Yeah, so we got a big piece of information about Sonic Forces.
Ooh.
Previously, we had heard that in addition to Modern Sonic and Classic Sonic, that there was some third unknown character, and people were like, what? It turns out that this will be an original character of your making.
What?
So basically, you know how on Twitter and all of the other internets you see all those bad Sonic OCs being posted everywhere?
Like in your notebook, yes.
Hey, what I was drawing in 1993 is my business and not yours.
Go on.
That being said, it actually sounds kind of cool because you're able to make your own original character. So the Sonic fandom is probably rejoicing. I don't know because I have not been a part of the Sonic fandom for a very long time, like pre-internet days, thankfully. But the cool thing is that depending on what animal you choose, there'll be different special abilities. So like the wolf can automatically draw in rings, which I guess would be kind of like the electricity shield from
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Which kind of makes me want to make a wolf character. But then a rabbit has longer invincible time after receiving damage. Cat, like who doesn't love cats, keeps one ring after being hit. That's pretty cool. A dog restarts with 5 rings after the player dies. A bear blows away enemies with a homing attack. Bird flies high with double jump abilities. And hedgehog collects rings when getting damaged. You can also determine what outfits and accessories your character will wear. In the trailer, they have, like, a cat or a fox or wolf or something wearing some hipster glasses. That's a little bit weird because, you know, like, Sonic and Sonic just wear shoes and gloves. So, I mean, I don't know about all
whatever.
That.
Whatever. It looks cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have to say that I'm actually kind of looking forward to Sonic Forces. Like, this sounds kind of cool.
You're getting ready to bring your OC to life?
Yeah, I've been waiting like 24 years.
I know you have, bitch. You know, I have to say, I actually am really excited for this. I know I'm giving you a little bit of trouble, but I think it's really cool the way that, you know, what type of animal you start from is really going to dictate your abilities. I think that's a cool twist and should give the game a lot of replayability, especially with stuff like the bear that, you know, blows enemies away with a homing attack.
Yeah, it'll be
interesting. Or the bird that gets a double jump. Like, double jumps will fundamentally change Sonic level design.
Yeah, my thing is that I'm hoping that there's almost like a kind of like testing grounds or something so that you can play around with the abilities before you decide what you want to do, but I don't know. And I just have to say, if you had seen the fan art comics that I used to make based on the idea of the Sonic Boom soundtrack being...
Were they pornographic?
No, I was like 10, but like, so okay, so like my
were they suggestive?
Sonic, no, my Sonic fan comics were about the idea of the Sonic Boom.
Did they kiss?
So remember the Sonic Boom CD that you got for pre-ordering? I think it was Sonic 3.
Yeah.
Which I still have in my CD wallet somewhere. So
I bet you do.
No, I do, because that was a Toys R Us pre-order. I'm pretty sure I've told this story before, but so my Sonic fan comic that I did when I was 10 years old was based on the idea of Sonic. This is before Sonic Boom was used as a cartoon title, like, a few years ago. Like, Sonic Boom was the name of their band, and, like, they did all the music, and Princess Sally and Sonic were not on good romantic terms because she was like dating some other original character that my sister and I made up. True story. In other news, your beloved Phantom Dust has re-released.
You son of a bitch. I was going to do this one. Yeah, so Phantom Dust stealth released just a couple of days after we recorded our last episode. So already starting to see the flaws in doing our E3 episode as soon as we did. We may have to do an E3 follow-up episode next week.
A pre-3 follow-up?
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, I've played the game now. It's kind of amazing. You know, it still feels super fresh to me. You know, graphically, it's a bit wooden, perhaps. You know, the controls are still a little stiff, you know, in the way that they were back on the original Xbox. But the actual game mechanics and game design, I think, has aged really well. I still think it's a lot of fun, right? I think so. I mean, I certainly feel that way. And they made some really cool tweaks so that, like, you don't have to play through the story mode up to the second or third chapter or whatever in order to get access to, like, versus mode. You can literally download the game for free because it is a free release, and you can be playing versus online within minutes, which I thought it was a really, really cool tweak to make. They do have, you know, like, paid in-game card packs that, as, like, microtransactions for people that don't want to grind out in the old way playing, you know, single-player story and what have you. I think that's actually a really cool way to handle a microtransaction situation, yeah, because you can still grind out all the cards without ever spending a single cent. You can grind out every card in the game that way, just like the exact same way that you grounded out back in the original release of the game. If you don't want to do that, pay a little money and you have your skills without having to do anything. I think that's cool. I overall am really optimistic about this release. I hope more people play it. It is a Windows 10 store exclusive on PC. Unfortunately, it's not on Steam, and it's obviously a Xbox One exclusive on console. It is a Microsoft game, but if you have a Windows 10 PC,
which a lot of people do, right?
Which a lot of people do. If you have an Xbox One, not as many people do. But I would highly recommend you play this game, and if you see me online, you should play with me, because we'd have a lot of fun, I bet. We also have word here of the return of the Make It Rain campaign in Final Fantasy XIV. This is the event that takes place in the Gold Saucer. It features special prizes, more MGP rewards, and a new story mystery. This is going to be starting on Monday, May 29th, and going through Monday, June 12th. There's going to be new pets. There's going to be some new cards that you get this way. And excitingly, there's a new haircut that looks so good.
So good. I guess it's a good thing that you managed to get my PC repaired for the time being. Yes.
Yeah, in fact, we're recording this right now on a Friday night at like midnight because I just spent a couple hours fixing your PC. So yay!
Yay, thank you. Now it's time to go back and get a crack at the cact pot. Oh, that was harder to say than I thought.
Get a crack at the cact pot.
Say crack again.
Get a crack at the cact pot.
He just came up to me and started talking about crack.
He just came up to me and started talking about cact pots.
So Voez for the Nintendo Switch has had an update that adds 18 more tracks. This is cool if you are someone who is playing this game. And, you know, it had like over 100 originally. And so this is a free update. I don't recognize any of these, but that's still really cool. I have to admit, I haven't spent really much time at all yet with Voez, but I like what I've played of it. And, you know, new tracks is always a good thing. I mean, I would say, you know, it's adjacent to things like Crossbeats Rev. I don't think it's quite as fun as Crossbeats Rev is. Crossbeats Rev is, but I mean, what is really? But yeah, it's still a solid, touchy rhythm game. And 18 more tracks makes it all the more worth the $20 or so that you would pay for it.
Absolutely. And dude, can we please get Crossbeats Rev on Switch? Like, you just said that, like, and yesterday. Now I'm salty. Now I am salty that we don't have that yet.
Capcom, are you listening?
No.
So, despite the controversy, Persona 5 has had the best debut in the franchise history for the United States. It's sold 5 times in its debut month what Persona 4 sold. Sorry, I had to kind of parse that in my head, and oh, I'm parched. So that's pretty good performance, especially considering that there's a lot of controversy around this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised, but also I'm not. You know, I really think that Persona 4 was where Persona really became a marquee title. And so Persona 5, despite any controversial things about it, was always destined to benefit from the popularity of Persona 4.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
there was no way Persona 5 wasn't going to be the new high watermark, honestly. Like,
and I'm going to get back to it at some point. It's just,
I saw a video, a demo reel of it playing at Target the other day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like Persona. Like, really? And yeah, no, I haven't really dedicated my time to it yet. But I will at some point once I get over being butthurt about the failure to really represent LGBT community in any kind of halfway decent or fair way. I'm still salty, but I'll get over it at some point.
Yeah.
So moving on from that, I would like to bring your attention to a really awesome update to Final Fantasy 15. This is, of course, the update that added the stinky tofu.
Oh my god!
But it also gives players the option to vote in a survey. And this survey is pretty interesting because you're basically voting on what kind of future DLC you want created for Final Fantasy 15.
AKA what content should have been in the game to start with, because this game was kind of bare bones.
Well, and I'm not trying to really dump on Final Fantasy 15. I liked that game. It was one of the best games I played last year, I felt, and still do feel. I liked the game a lot, but everything on this list should have been there in the first place. Mm-hmm. And the kind of the bitch of it is, you can only vote for one of these things on the survey.
So what are you voting for?
Well, let me go down the list real quick. You know, there's a handful of new playable characters, which would mean characters that would venture off with you, maybe even having, like, playable, like, Noct style, similar to what we've seen with, like, Gladiolus in the newer updates. We have playable characters for Kor, Aranea, Iris, Gentiana, and Lunafreya. So that right there already, anything with Lunafreya that's going to give us more Lunafreya character development, anything with Gentiana that's going to give us character development there, that would be major. Those should definitely be there. There's also the option for an additional hard difficulty. I think that's a little less vital, but still something that should be in the game. There's also new the option of new stat-changing magic, so, like, new buffs and debuffs. There's also the option for, like, new armature abilities, which, you know, like the Royal Swords type stuff.
Right.
But the really exciting thing is that there are, like, 7 options for new story content. Of course, one is Arden's Past. One is Lunafreya's Activities. One is Kor's Activities.
Ooh, I want to know more about Kor's Activities.
Right. The Line of Lucis, which would obviously be a big one. Ifrit's Betrayal, which obviously, again, another one of those story beats that, like, it just happens and it's like, what? Why is Ifrit against us? This doesn't track. Well, maybe someday we'll know. New story content for the World of Ruin, and new story content called Noctis's Disappearance. And my thing here is, literally all of these need to happen. I already feel like Final Fantasy 15 is a great game, but
with all of this, it could be the game that it should have been.
Exactly. With all of this, I think it would be unanimously a better, stronger game, a better, stronger story, and I think it could become, like, the crown jewel of the Final Fantasy franchise with all this. I really believe that. So I really hope that, you know, these votes are ultimately just for, like, what's being prioritized, and that long-term we get all of them. At this point, you know, Square Enix has put so much money into, like, post-release content, DLC. Like, at this point, just go all the way. Like,
my thing is that
don't stop just shy of fixing.
You know,
the damn
they did
thing.
13, 13, 2, and Lightning Returns. I mean, instead of trying to do, like, 15, 2 or whatever, just spend the time over the next few years until they're ready to really push 16 forward by, you know, slowly adding to this and then.
And making it the game that it should probably have been to launch in the first place.
Like, so 15 in its current form is kind of like original Advent Children.
Right. I was going to say non-Realm Reborn 14.
Oh.
Which is way meaner.
That is mean. That game was shit.
Yeah.
But hey, I'm, like, excited to resub to 14. So
yeah, me too. I might. It's possible I'll resub tonight, in fact.
Once I fall asleep.
Yes. I will, like, wait for you to fall asleep. So we also have word of those 2 announcements that were coming out of
Inti Creates,
yeah, at the Bit Summit event in Kyoto this past week.
Some of the mid-boss folk were over there.
Yeah. We got the announcement of the Azure Striker Gunvolt Striker Pack. This is going to be a Nintendo Switch release coming out at the end of August.
You can see Eggmania is getting a Switch release. I'm going to guess it.
And it's going to be Azure Striker Gunvolt. Gunvolt and Azure Striker Gunvolt 2 that are both going to have some new enhancements that will be exclusive to the Switch port, and it will include all of the DLC for Azure Striker Gunvolt 2. So this will be the best way to play Gunvolt 2, I think. IntiCreates has talked a little more since its initial announcement. It will be a digital-only release in North America, but the Japanese physical release will tie to the English download, so you will still be able to play the game in English on a Japanese cart, in case you, you know, collect physical, or just think it would be cool to have a Japanese Gunvolt cart, which, frankly, might be me.
Well, that's all well and good, but wasn't there also a Mighty Gunvolt, sort of?
There sure was. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so also announced was Mighty Gunvolt Burst, which will be releasing for Switch and 3DS, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, so this is coming actually next month. Strike Pack is in August, correct?
That is correct.
Right.
So I believe August 31st.
To wet your whistle, on June 15th on Switch, you'll be able to get Mighty Gunvolt Burst, or June 29th on the 3DS. This is a sequel to Mighty Gunvolt, which is, of course, the little 2D action game that was the companion game to Azure Striker Gunvolt. And so NT basically just wanted to have some more fun using Beck again, and Concept said, sure, go ahead, and we won't even charge you, because I mean,
right, like that'd be pretty cruel.
So it is coming soon for both. The Switch version, excitingly, will have HD Rumble.
Ooh, excellent. IntiCreates is really good at HD Rumble, though. I don't know, have you played Blaster Master Zero yet?
No, I haven't.
It makes great use of the HD Rumble. It really does.
Excellent. So Gunvolt fans have a lot to look forward to this summer.
Gunvolt fans, I don't know who you are, but you probably exist. Please look forward to it.
So, Toho... I'm not saying that right, am I? Oh, Toho, yeah. Toho Kabuto 5, or V, Burst Battle, is coming to Switch, but it is going to be delayed until September to accommodate launching on the additional platform. This is, of course, the Bullet Hell battle game in the Toho universe. I can't talk tonight. That's when you say tonight.
I was gonna say it too. I'm excited about this release. You know, I'm not a huge fan of this series necessarily, but I'm told this is one of the better games in it. So I'd like to check it out. I think it's cool it's getting a release, especially on Switch. I will buy anything on Switch, even Eggmania, as Slackick is so like to say.
And hey, Shrine Maidens are always fun, right?
Yeah, I really like their sake.
Yeah, I caught your Uriname reference.
Excellent.
I was just waiting for you to go onto the release infos.
I was waiting for you to go onto the release infos.
Well, finally, we have some word on South Park The Fractured Butthole. It will be out on October 17th, 2017.
You said butthole.
And, you know, I know it's been delayed a lot, but for the people who are into the South Park games, it actually looks a lot of fun. I know South Park is not everyone's cup of tea, but I'm looking forward to it. I know that Stick of Truth, again, for the people who are into South Park and who enjoy these types of games, they enjoyed it quite a bit. And if you can still do the thing where if you pre-order it, you can get Stick of Truth right away, right?
I believe that is true, yeah. That's on the PS4, right?
And although someone was saying that it's only if you... like, it's only either retail or digital. The other one, you have to wait until it's out.
Oh.
So I'll have to
Assume digital.
I would too, but I feel like it was the other way, which was weird to me.
Huh. All right, well, if you're in the market for that, you should do a little reading on that.
Yeah.
We also have word here that Gwent, which is the card game from Witcher 3, has entered its public beta as of Wednesday.
See, that's weird because I feel like I've heard so much about this that I thought it was already out.
Dude, I did too, but I guess it was in closed beta before. But now everyone can play it. It's on PC, X1, and PS4. And you can actually find a lot of people streaming it at any given time on Twitch. In fact, probably when we're done recording this, I mean, it's going to be the middle of the night at that point, but I'm probably going to try to turn on Twitch and see if I can find anyone playing Gwent.
But sadly, not turn on your Switch to play Gwent, because boo.
Womp womp.
Star Ocean Till the End of Time is
available now.
Yeah, on PS4.
Yeah, that's of course one of the emulated PS2 classics on PS4, which means it is running at a higher resolution. It has the trophy support and share functionality and remote play. Yeah, you know, it does have, you know, really primitive
texture work.
I was going gonna say model work, but it's still overall, I think it looks super clean. Like, I think it looks cool. And the funny thing is, given like sort of the uncanny look of the player models, the player character models, that would actually kind of tie into like the big end game twist. So I kind of dig it. We also have word here that Excel World versus Sword Art Online will be releasing in North America on July 7th. Zero Time Dilemma Remaster for PS4 will be releasing on August 17th in Japan. I'm sure it'll be coming out here, but I'm not sure when. I think we just have it for down for fall right now, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we also here have word that Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap will be releasing on PC on June 8th. Of course, this is super exciting itself because Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap is fantastic. I've been playing it on Switch. It is gorgeous. The new sprite work is phenomenal. And it's as good of a game as it ever was, which is say, it's fantastic.
Kingdom Fighters 14 hits Steam on June 15th.
Ooh, excellent. And last, but definitely not least, we have word of a new Micro Machines game? What? This is going to be releasing Micro Machines World Series on June 20th. 3rd for Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and PC.
Why are the Micro Machines on a Ouija board?
Well, and that's the thing, is that it actually has, like, a bunch of crossovers with other Hasbro products. So, I guess, like, there's, like, references to G.I. Joe, Hungry Hungry Hippos, Nerf weapons. So it kind of sounds really neat. I don't know. I might pick this up. What about you?
Looks kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the old Micro Machines games. I guess that's really the thing for me is, like, I'm a fan. Did you ever play any of those old Micro Machines?
I remember seeing them, but I remember assuming that they were Kusuge. I mean, not that I knew what Kusuge as a term was.
Oh, no, and I get that, especially, like, their graphics were not particularly good. I think if I hadn't been, like, a big gaming magazine reader, I probably would have passed on those games. As it is, though, you know, like, video games and computer entertainment in particular was all about those games, probably because they had a lot more, like, English writers, and I feel like that was, like, a big Codemasters UK project back in the day.
Oh, yeah, Codemasters was a pretty respected company, I guess, weren't they?
I guess. Anyway, let's move forward, because we do have some
news. Oh my god, news.
It's just news, guys. Calm down. Slaggy, do you want to get us started?
So in exciting news, Capcom has announced that Monster Hunter Double Cross is coming to Nintendo Switch. There is going to be actually probably happening right now because what is Japanese time right now? On May 27th at 12 p.m. Japanese Standard Time. So is it happening now? Did it already happen?
So I need you to just keep on talking while I check Gaff.
Yeah, so this also, interestingly, is not the big unannounced IP that we were talking about before. So, that's really exciting. I guess, remember, we had kind of wondered where the future of Monster Hunter was going to be, and looks like, Switch might be the place to be. And that's what, kind of what we were saying, right? That it would make way more sense for it to be on Switch than it would be on PS4 to go, you know, as the main Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This is good news.
And, okay, so we have a little more information. In fact, it'll be releasing on August 25th. Saves from Monster Hunter Double Cross on 3DS will be able to be transferred over to the Switch version. There will be 3DS crossplay, and there is going to be themed hardware in a bundle. They are making a Switch dock that has Monster Hunter graphics on it.
Oh, wow.
This thing is going to be effing huge. Holy moly.
You know what else has the potential to be effing huge?
The graphics look much better. So, I mean, it still looks, you know, it's a 3DS game that's running at a higher resolution. But when you really look at them, like, that's, like, this is way cleaner.
Yeah.
So this is definitely going to be treat for Monhun fans.
And that's going to push a lot of Switch consoles in Japan. Do you know what else is going to push a lot of Switch consoles in Japan?
What's that?
The Splatoon 2 hardware.
Oh, my gosh.
Because there is what appears to be a Splatoon 2 bundle that comes with a green and pink Joy-Con. The Joy-Con are also available separately, and there is a super cute Splatoon Pro controller with the grip areas being green and pink, and then there's like some Splatoon-y splat designs on the like face of the controller, as well as Joy-Con grip things. What are those things called? The little things that click on that you can do the wrist straps with. Joy-Con grips? I don't know. There's also a 540 yen Splatoon 2 box, so that if you want to have the box that the bundle comes with, or like the box that the bundle comes in, but it's not the bundle, then you can just get the box.
Okay, and you know, something funny about this, I've seen a lot of people on like Gaff and what have you talking about like who would want to buy a box, but something that I learned while I was in Japan, and I may have mentioned this previously, but basically everybody keeps the boxes to everything over there. Yeah, and you know, funny enough, I do that. Like, I've just been doing that incidentally. I didn't realize that was a normal thing in Japanese fandom. But, like, when you go to, like, secondhand stores that focus on reselling, like, tokusatsu toys, like, they all have their original boxes, they have their original pamphlets, they have the original plastic baggies that were in the box that have been, like, carefully cut open with scissors rather than being torn open like a savage like I would have done. Mm.
Now,
so,
they're
selling these Splatoon boxes, to me, is like, okay, so this is for people who collect boxes, or for people who already have a Switch but, like, want to be cool with their friends. And be like, oh, I got the Splatoon box too.
So, looking at this article on Kotaku again, is there an actual bundle that is being sold, or is that box art just the cardboard box that's being sold?
It is my understanding that there is a bundle, and they're also selling the bundle box separately.
This is also in Europe, by the way, so no word for North America, but European and Japanese Splatoon and Nintendo fans, this is something for you.
Yeah, indeed.
And I love those color of Joy-Con. I just know that DJ from Joystick Jockeys is going to get one of the pink ones to go with one of the blue ones, because that is totally his brand.
Oh, yeah. I will be legitimately shocked if that doesn't happen. Let's see. So we also got a new announcement of a new Nintendo Switch game. This is a new turn-based tactical strategy game. It is incredibly inspired by Advance Wars. This is called Tiny Metal.
I'm like, don't you mean Famicom Wars?
All right, basically. It's going to be releasing this October, and it's basically a Advance Wars clone. If you like Advance Wars and you're salty that we haven't had a new one lately, it's literally Advance Wars.
Wait, have we been talking about a bunch of games coming to Switch? What's happening?
Right? This is so weird. Like, it's a weird time to be a Nintendo fan.
The Switch is getting games.
Right? Who would have thought? We also have word here that
I always believed
Harvest Moon Light of Hope will be releasing on the PS4, PC, and Nintendo Switch. It will be shown and playable at E3 this year. And this is, as I believe Slaggy was just about to say, the new game by Natsume and Rising Star Games, not the new
Story of
Bokujo
Seasons.
Monogatari game. Or, yeah, Story of Seasons.
So, I mean, but from what I understand, the new Harvest Moon is still pretty passable.
Yeah, it actually does have people who are into it. And, you know, I did not play the last Harvest Moon game myself, the American-developed one. But I'm told it's good, which, hey, that's awesome, dude. As weird as that name controversy is, and it might be a little shady, honestly, the more good games we have, the better. And the more Nintendo Switch games we have, the better. So I'm super stoked.
Well, yeah.
Apparently, they're actually going back to the original Super Nintendo Harvest Moon as their motivation, their real goal. They want to sort of go back to some of the more like story elements and having goals, you know, getting married and all that really codified. I'm potentially very excited about that. I think it sounds good.
Yeah, I usually am not one to refer to the comments, but one comment on here on Silicon Era says that Bokujo Monogatari at this point is basically Otome game at this point.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely true, honestly. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think a lot of people have noticed that really the Bokujo Monogatari games have become about really, like, specifically the waifu aspect and the dating sim stuff. And, you know, so to have a game that's going back to the more traditional focus on create a farm, make this much money, make this many crops, you know, progress the story while you're rebuilding the farm or whatever, I think there's a market for both of these games to exist. I think that's rad.
And this one involves having a lighthouse. That's cute.
That is cute. There's always a lighthouse. So we also have word here of LEGO Marvel Super Heroes 2. This is, of course, very exciting. It's a new LEGO Marvel Super Heroes game. And it's going to be coming to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, and Nintendo Switch. You know, there was some confusion when this was first announced that the Nintendo Switch version might be coming at a later date. The most recent trailer release has it listed right alongside PS4, X1, and PC. I'm really hoping that they all come out on the same day because I don't want to have to wait to get my Spidey 2099 on while all my friends playing on PS4 and X1 get to do it sooner. Like, that makes me mad.
Yeah.
But that's really one of the cool things here is there's a lot of non-traditional games being featured as marquee characters in this trailer. Specifically, you know, Spidey 2099, a Wild West-themed Captain America, Spider-Gwen, Spider-Man Noir. There's a real focus on, like, Kang the Conqueror, which is, like, first off, traditionally accepted to be one of the Fox-licensed characters, so typically frozen out of these games for the last few years. But also, you know, like, a real focus on, like, a non-traditional Marvel villain. So definitely some exciting stuff going on right now. I'm really stoked for this game. What are your thoughts on it, Slaggy?
Yeah, I mean, I always enjoyed the LEGO games, so, you know, bring it on.
All right, we also have word here of the Xbox Game Pass service. Of course, we had gotten word back in March that, you know, we would be getting this service for a monthly fee. You'd have free, not free, obviously, but you would have access to over 100 games on your Xbox One. We now know what the price, launch date, and even what some of the games are going to be here. And this is going to be launching on June 1st. It's going to cost $9.99 a month. There will be a 14-day trial. And something that's, I think, really cool is that if you want to, like, you know, you've downloaded a game here, you want to buy it so that even after your Game Pass membership is over, you still have it. You'll be able to buy it for 20% off.
Oh, wow.
And all the DLC will be available for 10% off.
This is actually a really smart move.
Right? I actually think this is a way cooler step than what we have seen going
on with PlayStation Now.
PlayStation Now, yeah.
I honestly. Mean, at least they finally added a, you know, they finally, PlayStation Now finally added that subscription, right? Instead of just being the rental, but still, I mean, this honestly might get me playing my Xbox One more, especially if I can...
Right? For $10 a month, you have access to literally hundreds of games.
I mean, I don't... And still, the irony is, I don't think I would do it for PlayStation Now. I guess because there's actually PS4 games that I would play and buy. But, you know, for Xbox One, this might seem like the right thing.
Well, and it's, you know, the list of games here is, like, it has stuff including, like, Dark Dreams Don't Die. It has the DMC Definitive Edition, which is, you know, the remaster of DMC.
Oh.
That actually, like, rebalanced the entire game to be more like Devil May Cry 4. Which, that's actually, like, a cool version of the game. You know, Gears of War Ultimate Edition, Halo 5 is one of the games, Mad Max, Mega Man Legacy Collection, Resident Evil 0, Saints Row 4, Strider, Sunset Overdrive,
oh, wow.
Super Time Force, Shantae and the Pirate's Curse, Terraria, Scream Ride, and then a whole crap ton of 360 backwards compatible games. You know, all the Banjo-Kazooie games are there, all the Bioshock games are there, Borderlands, the Capcom Arcade Cabinet, Bionic Commando Rearmed 2, Dark Void, Double Dragon Neon, the Dungeons & Dragons Capcom Arcade ports, all of the Gears of War games, Galaga Legions, which is one of my personal favorites.
Now, I'm assuming that this is going to be like Netflix and every once in a while, games will be rotated out and new ones will be rotated
in. That is the expectation, but, you know, there's also stuff like Metal Slug 3, Neo Geo Battle Coliseum, Samurai Showdown 2, Perfect Dark Zero, the Pac-Man Museum, and the Pac-Man Champion Edition DX Plus, which is a phenomenal experience. Soul Calibur, Soul Calibur 2 HD, all of the Sega Vintage collections, including Monster World, which we talked about back on Game Boy Episode 1.
iDarb,
yeah. That's super fun. Virtua Fighter 5, Final Showdown, hello. Dude, this is, to me,
wow,
such,
like,
a treat.
This is like every game ever.
Practically, right?
The entire Bioshock franchise.
Yeah, yeah, I said that. They're all there.
Yeah.
So it's some cool stuff, man. I think this is awesome. Just, I'm definitely going to sub to this.
I think this just made it a definite for me.
Excellent.
My thing is that, like, with this many games that are worth it, I feel like, you know, spending $10 a month and then if deciding if I ever don't want to, just not subscribing anymore.
And then buying at a discount whatever games you did want to take with you.
I feel like I would get a lot more mileage out of my Xbox One than just being like, oh, I guess I could buy this game for $60. Oh, I guess I could buy this game for $60. Instead of dropping $60 a month on a new Xbox One game, spending $10 a month for the next 6 months to have access to 100 games.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I'm really stoked about this. But
I think
Microsoft's
got it. I think they've got something here.
I'm inclined to agree. So we also have word here that Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen is getting a release on PS4 and Xbox One, and that they will be coming to North America this fall.
Ooh.
The announcement was made in commemoration with the series' 5th anniversary, and I'm really looking forward to this. I think the Dragon's Dogma games are super underappreciated. I know they have, like, a real diehard niche, like, fan base. I'm one of those folks. I think if you haven't played it and you're into these kinds of games, you should definitely check it out. It's cool stuff.
Excellent.
We also have word here of The Lost Child. This is a new game coming out of Kadokawa Games being directed by Sawaki Takeyasu-san, whom you might be familiar with for his work on El Shaddai, Ascension of the Metatron, which is, I would actually say, the best-looking video game I've ever played. It was an old 360 game. I think it is still the best-looking game I have ever played.
Oh,
it is
wow.
A beautiful game. Someday it's going to be backwards compatible, and I'm going to be super happy. This game, though, it's going to be a turn-based dungeon crawler JRPG set in modern-day Tokyo.
With sexy character designs.
Yeah. So, and it is apparently going to have some lore components in common with El Shaddai. So definitely stuff to be excited about and look forward to.
Can I please take this
yep,
one?
Take this one.
So, Don't Nod Entertainment sent out a special thank you video to thank 3 million fans for purchasing Life is Strange and made the announcement that they are working on a brand new Life is Strange game. So I'm curious if this is going to involve Max and Chloe, or if it's going to be the same concept, kind of like, you know, I guess in a Bioshock way, where, you know, the same concept of gameplay, but with new characters. I'll take either one. Life is Strange was something very special, really powerful game, and really intriguing, and I'm just so happy that, they're revisiting this, because I feel like Don't Nod was working on some type of zombie game that sounded interesting, but, you know, Life is Strange is one of my favorite games of recent years. And
something that's funny is it was kind of a slow burn. You know, this game came out a while back, and it didn't right away light up the charts, but I feel like it had incredibly strong word of mouth. And we've just been hearing, I feel like, every quarter, like, oh, hey, Life is Strange moved a couple more 100,000 units.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I guess Vampyr is still on track for a quarter four release.
Dude, that's also awesome. That's the best of all worlds. Deserves all of this.
Wasn't Remember Me kind of a slow burn, too?
You know, it was.
Or just a slow, kind of never quite burned?
It never quite lit up the charts, but it did sell steady numbers. And last I heard was that overall, it did end up exceeding its lifetime-to-date expectation. You know, fingers crossed that's accurate. I think I read that on Gaff, but I really hope it's true because I actually thought that was a great game.
Mm-hmm.
Actually thought it had a lot of really interesting things to say. So if you haven't played Remember Me, also play that. But Life is Strange, we're getting more of it. I'm so excited. I hope it comes to Switch.
Now, I know Switch and Unreal Engine 4 go really well. Like, would that be true for Unreal Engine 3? Because Remember Me and Bioshock Infinite were both Unreal 3 games. I would like them both on Switch, please.
I don't think so, but but who knows? I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not Mr. Unreal. So last, but definitely not least, we have word that Q Games Studio, based out of Kyoto, probably familiar with their work on the Pixel Junk series, they have a new game coming out. It's Eden Obscura. And if that sounds familiar to you as a fan of the Pixel Junk series, that's because it is a semi-sequel / spiritual successor to the Eden games that they've made. It is going to be taking the ideas from Eden into some new directions, which I'm very excited about. And it's slated to release on iOS and Android sometime at a later date.
Oh, Oh, wait, so it's not a reference to the camera obscura?
Not to the best of my knowledge. Just pixel junk Eden, you know?
Oh,
Eden
no obscura. Spooky Japanese ghost pictures then.
Womp, womp. So that's about it for our news this week, but we do have some interesting stuff for you over in Culture Club.
Yeah, Rosie O'Donnell getting that haircut to try to get cast in Boy George's musical. That was like 2002.
Okay, so that's not a real piece of news.
No, but it was back. Don't you remember that? Like, it was shortly after Rosie had come out.
She had that asymmetrical ass haircut. Okay, I do remember that.
She specifically, people were saying, oh, she got that because it's like a lesbian haircut. And she's like, no, I got this because I wanted to show Boy George that I could commit to.
Commit to the bit. All right, well, our first piece of Culture Club news here is a really exciting one. You know, we talk about sort of news stories that are maybe not about the games themselves, but about the culture surrounding them. And this is perfect for that because Netflix's upcoming Castlevania animated series now has a trailer. It's going to be debuting on Netflix on July 7th, and this trailer is anime AF. I wasn't really expecting that. I guess I was expecting it to be more like, I don't know, like Spawn the Animated Series or something. But, I mean, if you didn't know it, you would assume this was a Japanese production.
Yeah, I thought it was until I remembered that it was not being done in Japan.
Right? Like, it's written by Warren Ellis. But anyway, it's going to be based on Castlevania III, Dracula's Curse. We do get to see all of the player characters from that game in this trailer other than Alucard, but we do get to see was that one of the Trevor Belmont games? Was that Trevor?
Oh,
right?
Gosh, I mean, you're the Castlevania guy.
We do get Grant Dynasty. We do get Sylpha.
Grant Dynasty.
Yes. So, really exciting stuff, though. The trailer looks super badass. I cannot wait to see this. July 7th cannot come fast enough.
I mean, this is by Frederator, right? Of Adventure Time.
That is correct.
And,
dude, I was watching it, like, I had forgotten that that's who was making it. I was like, did they get Studio Madhouse to do this? It looks just like Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust, and that is a compliment of the highest order.
Yeah, these are the people who did Fairly Odd Parents and stuff.
That's wild.
Nothing against Fairly Odd Parents, just saying.
Yeah, yeah. We also have word that The Witcher is getting a Netflix TV series.
Ooh, I want a hot tub scene.
Yes, I sure hope so. We don't yet know if it's going to be animated or CGI or live action.
Still want a hot tub scene.
But, yeah, it's going to be a Witcher series.
I should probably get around to at least playing Witcher 3. I know
yes,
that was
you
really...
should. Wild
really
Hunt is a great game.
Yeah, I've heard that it's really good. It should come to Switch.
It should. We also have word here that Nintendo will be doing a 2017 Summer of Play Tour. This is
it's
going
coming
to be
to a county fair near us.
This is going to be all across the U.S. starting June 9th and running through September 4th. Hitting such places as Irvine, California, Pleasanton, California, Bloomington, is that Minnesota?
Yes.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Chicago, Illinois, San Diego, California, Arlington, Texas, Miami, Florida, Bethlehem, is that Philadelphia?
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Look, I should have known that because there's a Bloodhound Gang song about Pennsylvania. I'm garbage. New York, New York, King of Prussia.
Pennsylvania.
And Baltimore, Maryland.
So we need to go to this county fair and maybe there'll be someone like Solange Knowles playing.
Oh my gosh. So that's the Alameda County Fair on June 16th through 18th.
So we're going, right?
Just after E3. If you're in the Bay Area, feel free to stalk us. Meet up with us. We'll play Switch and have, I don't know, deep-fried Twinkies. You're screaming right now, like
Sugar
literally.
Ray is playing on the Friday.
Are you kidding me right now? Like Mark McGrath?
Sugar Ray's playing. I kind of want to go.
Oh, dude, I hate my life so much. All right. We also have word here about a really interesting tournament that happened recently. This was the Battle of the Rages, and basically it was this Dota 2 tournament where they invited competitors to basically do their best competitive rage quit. So there's like a little table set up with like a dummy monitor and dummy keyboard and mouse and stuff. And they were just encouraged to like fake losing and just trashing the table. There's a video of it online. It's super fun to watch.
That's amazing.
We will link you to the Kotaku post about this over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
We also, of course, have word here that the Resident Evil movie franchise, which that last one blew up upon its Chinese release, made a whole crap ton of money. And so now they're going to reboot and do a new 6-movie series based on Resident Evil. It's going to be a little bit more of a focused horror experience and adaptation of the games.
Oh, so it's actually going to like involve the games more?
That is the stated plan so far. I think that's really exciting. What do you think? What's your take, Slaggy?
I mean, I've never watched any of the Resident... Did I watch any of the... Did I watch the first one, maybe?
I'm pretty sure we watched one of them for an episode of Game Buoy.
Yeah, but...
I've seen all but the most recent one. I think they're great, dumb fun. They're actually like the only zombie movies I can watch without having terrible nightmares after, so that helps.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Slaggy, do you want to take this next one?
Yeah, so with the announcement that Destiny 2 would be coming to PC through the Blizzard game client, formerly what you used to know as Battle.net.
And at the announcement of this, they still referred to it as Battle.net.
Aww.
Oops.
So basically the WoW tokens that you can sell for $20 you can buy for $20 each and then sell them in game, and people can buy them for, game time, or I believe now they can use it for just anything like, loot boxes and stuff, right? Like they extended it to be not just for WoW.
Yes, that is correct.
So basically, after the announcement, the WoW tokens spiked at the point of the announcement, or the day of announcement, to 140,171 gold. That's crazy.
That is wild.
See, the thing, the last time I bought a WoW token and sold it, I got maybe 40 to 60K, and I was like, oh, that's great. Apparently, the price about now, and I know that recently they went down for a little bit and weren't available, and now they're back. Now when you buy a WoW token, you can get about 120K gold for it.
Wowzers.
I'm about to go after payday, maybe buy another WoW token.
You're like, I'm about to go after payday. I'm like, I'm about to log in right now. If this episode stops recording, it's because you're running too much stuff.
And you're going to go buy like every one of the Jewel Crafter mounts plus because you have to get, if you want all of them, you have to have two of them so that you can combine them into the ultimate one. But then like it consumes them when you do that.
Slag kick. I have Jewel Crafters. I'll just buy the mats and make them.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm point. That's
okay.
My point. You already have the vial of sand, right?
That's correct.
All right, I've flown around on you.
Let's move on to a different story. I don't like that.
Oh, how about dead bunnies?
Oh, this story made me so sad.
This one is really weird. You want to take it?
Yeah. So basically, due to the way that Second Life is programmed, one of the most popular mods that existed in the game, these really adorable little bunnies. They're like super low polygon count, but still somehow managed to be super, super cute. They lost the ability to dial home for their DRM because of a change in how the back end of this mod works. So basically, for anyone who had the free version of the pets, which still had to like dial home for their DLC for the DRM, they all basically died last Saturday because they could no longer dial home. They basically went into eternal hibernation.
I am just thinking of someone that the we people used to
who
know
the people who paid for like unlimited unlocked bunnies, at least though, those ones will be good forever because they're already disconnected from dialing home. But the other ones, yeah, they are all dead now.
This just makes me think of someone who we used to know to whom Second Life was basically
their first life,
and I'm wondering if they are mourning the loss of their bunnies.
Bun. Well, don't be shady, be a lady. And that having been said, this is actually a really fascinating read. It's probably probably also our smash hit this week, but, you know, it was definitely a Culture Club story. We'll send you the link. We'll post it over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And let's wrap up this part of the conversation by talking about Nintendo fans.
Twintel.
And the way they are losing their minds over the most recent ARMS character reveal. This is Twintel. She got booty for days. She has amazing in-charge hair. She is a boss woman in total control of herself. I'm super into this character design. I think she looks hella good. Sai, what's your take?
You know, I love her, but I also really, I don't have this on the show roll, but this is arguably either a Culture Club or co-smash hit. And this one comes from Mike from Tanya DePass. You might be familiar with her for her work with I Need Diverse Games. She's done a lot of work and done some panels at the GX conferences. And she offers a really interesting perspective about how Twintel is, you know, it was really exciting that, you know, she's a woman of color, but about how the idea of her weaponized hair, it was just a really powerful piece for me because I didn't really think of it this way, about how the idea of people of color, how hairstyles in the game, in gaming, are so rarely portrayed. And like, if you want to make a character of color and have some sort of natural hairstyle, that you have very few options.
You know, that was actually my second pick for our smash hit this week. I thought that piece was incredible, but I also struggle here because I am not a POC. I am a white man,
right?
And within my own sphere of gamers, which I'm very fortunate. I feel very fortunate that includes a lot of people from a very diverse range of cultures and lifestyles. I don't actually know anyone in my own life who had anything but positivity to say about this character. So obviously that take, completely valid, incredibly important for us all to read. But I also want to make sure we talk about how excited people were.
Oh, definitely. And I say overall, you know, like I said, I cannot speak to the experience of persons of color, but I mean, whether or not this is a successful example of having a diversity in gaming, it sounds like a lot of people of color do feel that she is. So I'm glad of that.
Yeah, and you know what this really means to me, and what that really, really important and incredible piece said to me, was really that we just need to keep seeing companies try harder and listen to the fans. It doesn't mean that Twintel is bad. Doesn't mean
right.
she needs to go. It just means, you know, they need to keep working on it, do more characters, and design characters, you know, and have more options in character customizations. You know, give everybody the options that white people already have. Like, Jesus, it's not that hard.
Right, and the article that you are talking about, the Kotaku one, is by Gita Jackson, and she, I mean, I really value her, I value both her and Tanya's voices a lot.
Two of, I think, the most important voices in games journalism right now.
Right, so, I mean, you know, and, I mean, I think it's, like you said, it's very interesting that, you know, as a person of color, that people can have different perspectives on this, and I think it's really valuable that both sides are able to be heard.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Well, let's move this on a little bit because we do have some news that is
controversial.
Oh my God.
All right. So we have two pieces of controversial news for you here today. The first is about the bootleg amiibo business.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, NFC chips are cheap. And amiibo are expensive and rare. So, you know, basically what some people are doing is taking NFC chips, creating really cool cards with either like completely original art or Nintendo art from the amiibo boxes, and selling them as amiibo cards for those amiibo characters on like Etsy. And the really cool thing is, I know technically it's inappropriate for these things to be sold, but we're talking about literally like you can go on Etsy and buy one for 99 cents. So you're basically paying for costs and labor. You're not really like buying the product per se. And you end up with a product that, like, you know, if you want like a really rare amiibo but you can't get it, you end up with these amiibo cards that have really cool art on them.
Yeah, they are nice art.
To me, it's actually like a really great product that maybe Nintendo should be working on.
That's my thing. I feel like I don't support bootlegging, you know, but I think that this idea of a lower cost alternative for amiibo is, you know, I mean, we saw the amiibo cards with Animal Crossing, but like I really feel like the idea of amiibo cards for, I feel like that have they done anything besides the Animal Crossing so far for amiibo cards?
For the cards, yeah, we just got the Mario Sports Mix.
Okay, but that's it, right? Just Mario Sports Mix?
I believe just the two. I believe.
So I feel like they really do have some untapped.
There was also the Pokken Tournament card for Shadow Mewtwo.
Oh, okay.
That was, you know, created in the same style process.
I mean, I'm still waiting for Pokemon Trading Card Game amiibo cards, but
I can't imagine they will ever do that, but if they did, I would buy the heck out of them. Anyway, I thought this was a really interesting article. One of the things I really like about this article, it's over on Kotaku. Of course, we'll link you, GameBuoy.org. Is that it really, I think, is very even-handed. Like, it does acknowledge bootlegging is wrong, but, you know, if we're going to have
people made these.
Well, right? And if we're going to have stuff in Breath of the Wild that, like, you need to have the Smash Brothers original Link amiibo, otherwise you can't get Epona, like, maybe that Link amiibo should still be on the market then. And the fact that it isn't is kind of unfair to people who didn't even have a Nintendo console before the Switch, maybe. You know, they didn't have a Wii U. They weren't buying amiibo. And now they have to miss out on game content because they didn't buy a $14 figure 2 years ago. That's kind of lame. And I have to agree. I have to agree.
Good point.
We also have word here that the question about whether or not Valve can actually claim ownership of Dota 2 is finally going to be resolved. However, to the surprise of many of us, this is actually going to be going to a jury trial. So we will definitely have updates for you as we move on. But part of why this is such a big deal, of course, is that Dota originally started as a fan-made mod for Warcraft 3. And after a point, you know, basically Valve just decided to make a Dota game. They worked with Blizzard to make an agreement that they could do that, but you know, there's always been some question whether Valve was really in the right, whether Blizzard had the rights to even make that agreement. So it's going to be interesting to see a jury make a decision on this, and I think it will actually be a precedent setting case when all is said and done.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. At this point, I'm just like, I'll just go play Heroes of the Storm though.
Right? Oh, man. You know, they're actually going to be doing a Heroes of the Storm anniversary event toward the end of the month, I heard.
Oh, just like the Overwatch overversary.
Exactly. So we do, unfortunately, have some sad news here in our segment, what we call
Doom and Gloom.
Yeah. It should be called Moba Gay Sayonara or something today.
Yeah. Well, we have word here that Square Enix's ultimate action RPG, Samurai Rising, which you may remember us talking about just earlier last year, not even a year ago, just last summer, it launched. It's like a Crystal Chronicles type, like, RPG action game with some really cool art, with character designs super reminiscent of Bravely Default. It's kind of like everyone who likes the stuff we like should probably be into Samurai Rising.
Except it's
actually going to be terminating service effective July 14th. You know, unfortunately, they decided, you know, that the game just was not getting enough plays and that, you know, they could probably have fixed it. They could probably have fixed it because, you know, there were some issues people had with the game.
Oh, it's their fault, too.
But ultimately, there weren't enough people playing it to justify the expense of fixing it. And, you know, that really sucks. But at the same time, better to move on if it's not working for them. The more interesting thing here is that we were actually looking at a
downfall of mobile social games.
I was gonna say we were looking at a study done by Otapool in Japan that was looking at, you know, the last year in MOBA games, not even the last year, like the first four months of this year, and more than 100 smartphone games had announced termination of service in Japan, including some big hitters, you know, stuff like Demon's Gate, Kakusansei Million Arthur, which, like, that has anime based on it and stuff. Like, that's a big game. Caves, Shirotsugu.
Justice Monsters 5. We talked about that
Yeah,
one,
Justice Monsters 5 is a big one. I was actually saving it, but Dead Man's Cross by Square Enix, Onimusha Soul by Capcom, Street Fighter Puzzle Spirits by Capcom, which was actually a game I played and liked, so I'm kind of bummed about that.
A lot of gung-ho titles.
A lot of gung-ho titles. The Street Fighter Battle Combination, Dragon Quest Monsters Wanted.
One Piece Adventure Log.
Yeah, one of the Tokyo Ghoul games, Carnival Color, one of the cute high defense Earth Club love game.
Yeah.
So just a lot of games being canceled, like some really big, like well-known games, like the Chinese version of Puzzle and Dragons.
That's wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely,
it isn't Gung Ho based in China?
I believe so.
So that's wow, yeah.
Yeah, so just things are not looking good for Mobage these days.
It's just as funny because for a while it was like, oh, it's a mobile social game.
Right?
A mobile social game.
And I guess
this is our doing, Captain Spike.
I guess we see how the world turns, because now suddenly everything's getting announced and it's like, oh, of course it's going to be on a Nintendo console.
So basically, this is us putting that into the universe.
I choose to believe.
All of our shade for mobile social gaming and our incessant love of Nintendo has finally paid off. Who would have thought that would have been the case when we started this podcast?
It's only taken 20-odd years. Not of this podcast, I just mean of wanting the success of Nintendo in general.
Indeed.
All right, well, let's get to our discussion. And
it's our news buddies.
Yeah, it's our news buddies. So here's the thing. We had a lot of news here, and we always like to sort of clear off the deck of our news before E3. We're going to do another news episode next week, possibly with a mini discussion attached, probably a pre-3 discussion again. Pre-3 part 2, maybe? Is that alliterative enough? Is that irritating enough? Pre-3 part 2.
We have a week to workshop it.
I see that shade. So, but I want to talk about some of the biggest news stories this week that we haven't talked about here. I want to go dive a little deeper. And the first one I want to talk about is the Project Rap Rabbit Kickstarter. We had, of course, talked previously about Project Rap Rabbit.
Basically, as just a teaser, though.
Well, exactly. And, you know, this is the new game by Masaya Matsura-san and Keiichi Yano-san.
Dream Team.
The forces behind Parappa the Rapper and Gitaru Man.
Longtime friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Who never have worked together.
So, basically, the thing is, when this Kickstarter went live, for the base release of the game, they were seeking $1.1 million. That was for a PlayStation 4 release and a PC version. And then they had a whole bunch of Kickstarter goals, or like stretch goals is the word I'm looking for, sorry. And these went up to a pretty ridiculous price range. Like, they wanted $1.8 million for the Premium Explorer kit that would add an additional level to the already only 6-level game. For an additional $500,000, they would add French, Italian, German, and Spanish localization menu options and subtitles for cutscenes. Then for nearly another $1 million, we would get an Xbox One port. At $3.5 million, we would get another extra level for 8 in total. For $3.9 million, we would get a multiplayer versus mode. For another $500,000, we would get an extra difficulty level to total out at 4. And for another $500,000 on top of that, we would finally get a Nintendo Switch port, along with 3 backer only versus mode costumes. Basically, people lost their minds about this. Like, so they're basically looking for $5 million for a fully featured version of this game. A lot of people feel like that is unrealistic for an eight level rhythm platformer. If this follows in the lines of like the Parappa games, that means it's going to be like a 45-minute experience if they make their $5 million. Of course, you know, we have now learned a little bit more about Project Rap Rabbit. The actual gameplay sounds really cool. Like, basically every phrase you're rapping back and forth, and you're like choosing, like,
it's more like a
what
rap
your
battle.
Tone is gonna be. Well, exactly. And you're choosing what your tone is gonna be. And you know, each tone will have like different lyrics to the song. songs, and so you're trying to make, like, the versions of the songs that have the most points and sound the most cool. It actually sounds like a really cool game, but a lot of people feel like that's just too much money to ask for in the modern day. And there was additionally a lot of heat for the Nintendo Switch port being the last stretch goal, when it really is the platform that a lot of people want to play this on, not just Nintendo fans, but a lot of serious rhythm gamers want to play on the Nintendo Switch, specifically because lag is much less of an issue on these handheld platforms, because you're not dealing with lag introduced by your TV display.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, I'd like to know what your whole thought is on this, both Project RapRabbit itself as a game, the kerfuffle around the Switch stretch goal, and about, you know, just the general gameplay and campaign.
I am really excited about this. I think that it is the, like, next evolution of a Parappa-type game. They're both... I'm a big fan of what they've both done, obviously. I think it's great that they listened to the feedback and...
Well, and so that's the part two here, is they did listen to the feedback. They have brought down the stretch goal numbers significantly, so that getting the Nintendo Switch port is now the first stretch goal, and it's not at that high of an amount of money.
It honestly makes me more tempted to contribute more than I already planned.
That is, well, hey, that is great news. Unfortunately, the game is not, the actual, like, pledges are not rolling in, probably because of that difficult launch. Most Kickstarters make the majority of their money in the first 2 days, and the first 2 days of Project RapRabbit, people were not all about it, which obviously is a pretty big problem. Right now, it doesn't really look like it will get funded, but I still have my fingers crossed. I want to play this game super bad, and right now, now, the Nintendo Switch stretch goal is set for 1.5 million, which, still a lot of money, but reasonable. I'm sorry, Saigi, continue talking about Project RapRabbit.
Well, they're about 10% of the way there. They're at about 157,000 right now, so, you know, they're working their way there.
Statistically speaking, most Kickstarters only get 1 to 2% of their goal per day during the sort of middle days of the campaign. The vast majority of the money comes in on the first 2 days of the campaign, and then a large percentage often comes in the last 2 days of the campaign.
Yeah, I'm going to be bummed if this doesn't get funded. Like I said, I think it sounds a lot of fun, and I mean, I don't know, I hope that if it doesn't get funded, that someone steps in and says, oh, we'll fund you.
Yeah, I hope. I don't want it to be any of the platform holders, because I just want this game to be able to come out and be played by everyone and loved by everyone, even if I will be doing it on Switch.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you wanted to say about that?
No, it's just, it's interesting that, people, that just kind of the Kickstarter dynamics, and how, because people were initially, like, they've listened to the feedback, but still people are like, nope, still not going to.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people are still struggling with the Mighty No. 9 kerfuffle and how that played out. I really think we need to see one of these Kickstarters hit a home run. The thing that's irritating to me is that we already have. It's called Shovel Knight. It was a lot of people's game of the year when it came out.
Yeah.
Like, that was a great game, and that was a Kickstarter game. Like, no, guys, these legacy devs, they can be trusted from time to time. I really do think RapRabbit is one where these numbers seem high to us because we don't make games, but if you make games, you license and have music created, this stuff takes a lot of money. It takes a big investment. We're just not used to seeing it because so many Kickstarters ask for $100,000 when they need $800,000, and then the game either never comes out or it comes out half-baked. I have a lot of complex feelings about this going in every direction. Well, then let's move on. We had a really big leak this week when we finally got leaked art regarding Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle. This came in
another game about rabbits.
Yes. This came in the form of an internal use, like, promo package for internal use. We basically got to see sort of what the timeline for the game's release is. We got to get a sense of sort of what the design goals are. Sort of got the idea of, like, what kind of game we're going to be playing when it comes out. I actually think this game looks really cool. It's going to be a turn-based RPG with tactical options. It is going to have some world exploration in the style of, like, Mario RPG. Sort of the goals are for them to bring, like, weapons to the Mario universe, sort of a self-referential sense of humor that is, you know, not necessarily taking itself super seriously, but also giving us new depictions of the Mario characters, including a Princess Peach who is in complete control of herself and wields a laser gun.
Yeah, is it just me, or are these internal PowerPoint slides kind of LOL?
They're super LOL. And, you know, I saw a bunch of people who are like, this is so obviously fake. Nintendo would never put out promotional materials referring to Princess Peach as kick-ass.
No, but Ubisoft would.
Right? They're internal. Like, this is absolutely internal use stuff. Like, I know this for fact. And something really interesting, you know, is that we've been hearing about this game rumored for months, and we've been hearing about, oh, it's going to be releasing in August or September.
My favorite slide is where it says, June, surprise at announcement, E3, reveal plus first hands-on. July, convince media and gamers. Gamescom. August, go big for launch.
Yeah, so we actually know this game not only exists, it's basically done if they're going to be releasing it in just 3 months.
Is this what, like, internal stuff? I mean, I believe it's real. I know, like, I don't think it's fake at all. But is that really how, like...
This is very typical for Ubi. We actually got some leaked stuff like this for Rayman, I want to say Legends?
Complete with, like, go big for launch.
Basically. And I know that other studios that I have had some personal insight into have also produced stuff like this. It wouldn't really be appropriate for me to name names, but yeah, right. this is a normal thing
and
in the industry.
The thing is that it's kind of, on one hand, and I don't know if this is jumping the gun here, kind of sad that it's kind of taken a little bit of deflated the balloon of their surprise, so to speak. But on the other hand, the way that especially gay Twitter is all over hashtag sassy, hashtag no filter Peach Rabbit, like, I think that people are definitely, you know, interested in this. And
yeah, and you know who, I personally love the idea of this crossover. I'm not necessarily the world's biggest Rabbids fan, but there's something really funny to me about, like, the core Mario 4 teaming up with a group of four rabbits that are, like, trying to impersonate them and, like, failing in their ineptitude. Like, that's just patently funny to me. Like, every time I see that Peach one, which, by the way, I continue to read that hashtag sassy as hashtag babby.
Me too.
It just makes it funnier. She's, like, taking a selfie on her rabbit phone. Like,
yeah.
It's ridiculous. I love it. I think it's hilarious. I really want to play this game.
Yeah.
It looks funny.
I have to say, if Nabbit is not involved somehow, I'm going to be pissed.
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, and something I actually thought was really cool was that, you know how Bowser Jr. has that little bandana that has, like, the little drawn-on face on it?
Yeah.
That actual little drawn-on face is actually on the Crazy Rabbids gun. Like, on the far left, if you're looking at that slide where it's, like, hashtag the crazy one.
Oh,
his
yeah.
His gun has the little drawn-on Bowser Jr. face, and that is such a cute touch. Like, I've seen a lot of people who are like, oh, Ubisoft's gonna screw Mario up, and I'm kind of like, no, I think this might elevate them a little bit. I think they're really going all hands here, and I'm excited to see how that turns out.
Yeah.
Still doesn't make up for the fact that supposedly we're not getting Assassin's Creed on Switch. Just FYI, Ubi.
Yeah. This must have come out of, like, Montreal or something, because there's some typos.
Are you being racist right now? Like, why would Montreal automatically connect to errors and
because
typos?
Because they speak French in Montreal.
So you're a big racist.
No.
Well.
How could I be racist against French Canadians?
All right, so we also are going to talk about the Nintendo Switch, which in North America sold 280,000 units in April, and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe sold 550,000 units. And let's keep in mind, for the April numbers, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe was only available for two of those days in April.
It sold those in April in 2 days?
Yeah.
Damn! Damn, Daniel! Damn, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Like, literally 2 days, this Mario Kart 8 Deluxe sold more than 500,000 units in the U.S. alone. You know, we've been hearing about how the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe launch was the biggest launch in the Mario Kart franchise. I don't think any of us realized it was going to be by that much. Like, that's off the hook. That's wild.
Yeah, I mean, Mario Kart is huge. You were saying this last time.
Yeah, yeah.
Mario Kart's huge.
Absolutely.
And for good reason. Mario Kart's the best.
And, you know, the crazy thing is, when you really stop and think about, like, the momentum Nintendo is building with the Switch, you know, since that came out and released, we got Minecraft on the Switch. We've now got Street Fighter 2 on the Switch. We have ARMS coming up in just, like, 2.5 weeks.
Yes.
And then Splatoon just another month from that. And E3 is going to be happening between there. So we're also going to be getting all kinds of new announcements.
It's too bad that we're going to be at the
Alameda Monster County Hunter announcement.
It's too bad we're going to be at the Alameda County Fair watching Sugar Ray instead of playing ARMS on its launch date.
That is not a thing that's happening. No, we'll do both.
Because there's
if ARMS, we're going to do it, we'll do both.
ARMS is going to be at that event.
Okay, fair enough.
Maybe we'll get to play ARMS with Mark McGrath.
So, you know,
punch him in his, like, totally plastic surgeried face.
Part of why we called this News Buddies is that these news stories sort of correspond with one another. And the News Buddy to that is word that yesterday, or even early today, Nintendo gained over $2 billion US in market value following Capcom's announcement of Monster Hunter Double Cross on Switch. So we are now into Nintendo stock value being in, like, the Wii era numbers. And we haven't even gotten to Pokemon yet.
Wow.
Yeah, this is truly remarkable. You know, we had heard and noted that a week or two ago, Nintendo's stock numbers had gone up and market values had gone up to where they were at the height of the Pokemon Go craze. Now we're looking at Wii numbers? And every indication that we're going to be hearing about a Pokemon game in the next few months.
And in the political sphere, there's talks of impeachment. Is the future as doomed as we thought it would be?
It's a pretty good time to be a Nintendo fan right now. Slightly, what's your take on this story?
Yeah, this is just, I mean, I'm over the moon, honestly, because, you know, there were a lot of naysayers who said that the Switch wasn't going to do well, and I'm just thrilled. I mean, not just because those people are now eating their words, but I'm just thrilled that, you know, I like the Switch a lot. I do have a heavy Nintendo bias, but I'm just really happy to see, you know, because the Wii U, that really was a rough spot, in the words of Mrs. Kasha Davis.
Girl, that really was a rough spot.
Was that her, or was that Ginger Minj?
No, I'm pretty sure that was Kasha Davis.
Oh, no, it was Ginger Minj, because Kasha Davis was album and a t-shirt,
Oh, my gosh, okay, you're totally right. And anyway, this is not Reading is Fundamental, although if you're in a drag race, to Reading is Fundamental. That about wraps it up for that pair of news buddies. Let's move on to our last one. The first is that we got the surprise reveal and release date announcement for Far Cry 5. This is going to be releasing on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC on February 27th, 2018. The thing that's wild about this, though, is that this is actually the first entry in the series set in the U.S. You know, typically these games, they involve taking down, you know, criminal organizations or, you know, venturing in between two warring factions in what Ubi typically refers to in-game as third world countries. And you basically come in and white savior their asses and kill a bunch of POCs as a white character. This is something that, for a lot of us, I think, makes us feel a little uncomfortable, even if we're potentially interested in playing the game. And you know, I know there are going to be some listeners out there who they didn't feel that way, or, you know, they think that, like, it's just a game, relax. And that's cool. You know, if you can do that and you can enjoy these games, truly, that's awesome. I just can't. It kind of turns my stomach when I see a white character killing rampant people of color. I actually have that same problem with some of the later Resident Evil games.
And the game design has looked pretty great in, you know, at least since 3 is when I've been, you know, more following them a little closely, you know, but...
Yeah, yeah, and that's the kind of thing I actually struggle with in, like I said, not just Far Cry, not just Ubi games, even stuff like Resident Evil 5, Resident Evil 4 to some degree. Like, you know, I'm just not entirely comfortable traveling to Africa as as Chris Redfield and shooting people of color in the head.
And then what's the Tom Clancy The Division?
Oh, yeah, The Division is awful. Like, that's straight up, like, kill kids in hoodies because they are assumed to be gangbangers.
Ugh.
Yeah, like, that is some garbage. So, Far Cry 5, you're actually going to be liberating Hope County, Montana, where a U.S. armed militia that is like a group of Christian extremists led by Pastor Jerome Jeffries.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Have basically taken over this town with their...
So they basically Oregon militia'd it?
Yes, exactly. That is exactly. And you know, I would want to take one step back. The Pastor Jerome Jeffries is actually one of the hero characters. He is one of the protagonists. But the antagonists are still, like, preachers and pastors among their count. So, you know, this is very much, in the eyes of many liberal folks and more liberally minded folks, it does seem sort of like you're forming the resistance. Literally, your group is called the Resistance. And a lot of people feel like it's basically a game telling a story about resisting the ultra-conservative. I'm trying to think of a way to talk around words, because I don't really want to, like, shit-talk anyone who's listening to this show. It's not my goal to make anyone feel bad, but, you know, if you're, like, super conservative and, like, shitting on people for being different and, like, trying to rule through fear and chaos and pain and oppression and fucking racism and shit, this game appears by all means to be about fighting that kind of shit and fighting people like you.
Yeah, I don't think that type of people are listening to us.
You're probably right.
The thing that I love is that not only that, but typically I feel like in most of the Far Cry games, you are set as, like, this white dude or whatever. I mean, I know, like, Far Cry 4, like, you were originally from that land that they made up, but it was really just supposed to be, like, an analog for another country. And, you know, so, like, you were, like, you know, so, like, they tried to make it a little bit less yucky that way. But, I could be wrong. There might have been ones where you can customize yourself more before, but you'll be able to customize your character by gender and skin color. This just makes me, and the fact that you can play co-op with another person, I'm like, can we please be fierce women of color taking down bigots, please? Like, can that be our thing?
That there is a certain appeal to that idea.
I mean, I don't want to be gross and be like, you know, like
tokenistic or what have you.
Right, right. But it almost makes me wish that, like, you know, that the main character was a fierce woman of color, and like that you just, you know, that's who she was, and everyone played her. But like I said, I don't mean that in a like, ooh, it would be fun to be a fierce POC. Like,
no, but you want to fucking stomp on the trashy folks, and if that happens to be stomping on trashy white folks, so be it. As a strong, you know, person of color,
I just think
oppression.
I just think the symbolism of that is the potential symbolism of that is just
Well, to that I say hell yes. We also got a huge info dump
about another first-person shooter.
This one is Destiny 2, and, you know, we made a vague reference to it earlier. It will be releasing on September 8th on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. The PC version may be out at a later date. It has actually come out since that original reveal. We will have more information for you on that at a later date.
And it will not be PC capped at 30 frames per second on PC.
PC version is going to have an uncapped frame rate.
Guess it's time to get that new PC build started.
The console versions will be locked at 30 frames a second, even on PS4 Pro and Xbox Scorpio. And it has been said that that's because it's a very CPU-intensive game. Lots of different things going on at the same time. Lots of things for the game to be tracking and what have you. And unfortunately, the primary benefits of Scorpio and PS4 Pro are really more GPU-related. And that, unfortunately, does absolutely track. One of their big design goals is that all of the trials, raids, and Nightfalls weekly are going to be available to all players. There's going to be a new system. It's called Guided Games that will basically, you know, like what we do on the Destiny Reddits where people volunteer to Sherpa groups of like less experienced
Sherpa
gamers.
People up the Mountain of Gayness.
Yes, basically, but Mountain of Gayness in this case is Destiny, you know, Taken King, Citadel, and all that. So, overall, really excited about this. The game, it does in some ways look like a bigger, badder, better version of Destiny, but at the same time, for me, that's enough.
Yeah, like I said,
what do you think?
I have not spent as much time with Destiny as I really should have, but what I've played of it, I've absolutely loved. It's ironic that I'm, like, really inclined to get this on PC, because Destiny is, like, probably the one FPS that I've played on a console where the controls, for lack of a better word, like, just sing to me. That being said, for the only time, or, like, FPS only really started to click for me once I realized that keyboard and mouse was, you know, like, it really worked for me. It was Team Fortress 2, when I was dating the guy who got me into TF2. I was like, oh, wow, this actually plays a lot better than when you play on a Xbox 360. But anyway, so I'm really excited. I think this is going to be a good opportunity, rather than, you know, at this point, trying to, you know, really sink a lot more time into Destiny 1. And honestly, like, if I end up, you know, getting this on PC and I'm, like, end up being able to be fairly good at it, I'm like, this could be my new time sink. Like, honestly, like, I like Destiny enough, so the fact that I can play it on PC with controls that are probably going to be even more natural for me for this genre of game, with, you know, the PC also being the best, arguably the best way to play it. I hope it has, like, parental controls that will control, like, the, amount of time you can play so that I don't, like, get fired from my job.
LOL. All right, well, it's about time for us to start wrapping this up. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about the news, buddies?
No, just that, I'm interested. These are all, were all very interesting news items in their own way. And on the Destiny tip, like I said, Destiny 2 tip, I think that it's really, this summer is gonna be, I'm gonna need your help. I'm gonna be like, will this be able to run Destiny 2? Will this motherboard work for Destiny 2?
I will kill you.
Yeah. Well, with that, I think it's time to talk about...
No. We say it's time to start winding down by discussing what's up.
Sorry.
The juxtaposition of these two ideas is important. How dare you?
Well, I'm hungry, so sue me.
I said, hey, what's going on?
All right, well, this week I have been playing Minecraft on Switch. It remains, you know, a really solid implementation of Minecraft. Really enjoying taking it with me, being able to play it on, you know, the train on my daily commute, come home, slot it into the dock, and then play on TV for a little while.
Yeah.
It really is a game changer. Holy moly.
Like, there was a mobile version, right? Or is
it? Yeah. Pocket Edition, and then just Minecraft that happens to be on mobile. Pocket Edition was kind of jank. The newer version is pretty good.
So, I mean, but until Switch, that was really the only way to have Minecraft on the go, right?
It was also on Vita, but the Vita version had a lot of technical issues.
You really?
You're not wrong.
Are you really talking about Vita in 2017? Are you really?
Yeah, because I'm a reasonably educated video game podcaster. I'm sorry that you're not.
You aren't wrong.
Oh, buddy, I'm sorry. Let's see. I also finished my playthrough of Kingdom Hearts Final Mix HD from the 1.5 plus 2.5 collection on PS4. Taking a little bit of a break before I start Kingdom Hearts 2, though. Playing some Injustice 2 in my PS4 time right now.
Ooh, you should wait until I finish Kingdom Hearts 1 and actually start it on my 1.5 and 2.5, so then we can play 2.5 at the same time. Except that being said, you're going to be like, no, I'm not going to wait for you, bitch.
Probably. So Kingdom Hearts, fantastic. It running at 60 frames a second makes the combat feel so smooth and so fun. I haven't replayed that first Kingdom Hearts game that many times, so it was a real treat to revisit it. I don't think I had replayed it in the last 10 years, so it was really cool. I really enjoyed it.
Wait, you didn't replay it on PS3?
No, I picked it up and I started it, and then I went through a really bad breakup, and I just didn't really want to touch it for a little while. Yeah, because like the night before the breakup, I had been playing it, and so it had like some associations. Yeah. You know,
see, I mean, I haven't played it since PS2, so I mean, it's probably going to be like, what? Like, this game is the same game?
Injustice 2, super fun game.
Oh, good.
I still struggle sometimes, though, with like how edgelord the setting is, because it's basically like, what if all DC canon was rewritten by a bloodthirsty 9-year-old? Superman breaks people's backs now and explodes them and tears them apart so their interests trails go everywhere.
Cool.
Brutal. But as a game, super fun. I'm really loving the way they do like the multiverse stuff, which is like basically online daily challenge type stuff. The gear system is really cool. All of the gear equipped on your characters changes your stats and stuff, but also changes your appearance. And I've seen a lot of them that are like gear pieces that specifically reference specific separate versions of characters, like different Elseworlds versions. So now I'm just like, dude, am I gonna find that like Gotham by Gaslight like Batman? Because that would be cool. I'd be into that.
I'm glad it's a good game, but you've totally lost me with the DC stuff. I can barely keep up with Marvel as it is.
Fair. Let's see. So also been playing some Ultra Street Fighter 2 that actually came out today.
Yeah.
So I just did a quick run through in arcade mode, single player, Ryu. Did all the characters, fought Akuma, won, obviously. Super fun. I think it's a great implementation of Street Fighter 2. I'm really looking forward to digging deeper into it. And then today was the first round of the ARMS Test Punch, so I got to play that for about 45 minutes of it. I loved ARMS when I played it back at the Nintendo Switch preview event.
Does it feel more polished?
I still love it now. Yes. Yes, it does.
And it was already good then, so that's good.
Yeah, I was thrilled, and judging by my Twitter timeline, I think ARMS is going to be huge. Saiki, what about you? What have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of Mario Kart 8. Continue to love it. I mean, I've been saying that for years, obviously. It sings on the Switch, and we were actually playing a pen and paper game at Seawolf Jason's, who hasn't been on. We've got to get him on again. He hasn't been on in a few years, but one of the reasons he hasn't been on is because he now has two children, and so while he and his wife were needed to take a break to take care of their 2-year-old and 1-month-old, you know, because as children do, they have needs and stuff. So the rest of us were like, hey, we've got some Switches here, let's bust out Mario Kart 8. So that was really cool to get that, and that was my first opportunity with multiplayer split screen on a little Switch screen, which definitely took some getting used to. So I definitely feel like having my own Switch and being able to do that is still the best, but it was really cool. And we had some people playing with just one Joy-Con, some people playing with the two Joy-Con separately. Like one of our friends was playing with the two Joy-Con of mine detached from my Switch while I was using my Pro Controller. It's just like, this is so effing cool that there are so many like iterations of ways to make this work. Like, the Switch, goddamn Nintendo. The other thing is I did pick up Minecraft for Switch. Unfortunately, just due to a really busy couple weeks, past 2 weeks at work, just really like a lot of, I guess you could say end of the fiscal year, so to speak, or whatever, stuff going on. I just have not really been able to do much aside from play around in the tutorial level, but definitely excited to generate my own world now, and now that I have the basics down, make a little shelter, hopefully get a doggo, and start getting some materials so I can get, like, is diamond the good stuff? Diamond pickaxes and stuff?
Yes.
So, yeah. So, that's been about it for right now. Unfortunately, did not get a chance to spend any time with the Test Punch before I came over to the SS Buoy here, so, but definitely looking forward to talking about that next time. I'll probably have some things to say about Ultra Street Fighter 2 as well, and probably more about Minecraft.
Awesome. I look forward to it. All right, well then, with all of this having been said, it's time for us to hit our social links. Do we have any this week?
We do. We have a Tweet Buddies. So it's two tweets from Brondwarf, so I'm just calling it Tweet Buddies in the spirit of our episode. Brondwarf over from Nintendo Fun Club saying, Doug the E3 preview. I'm with you on everything on Switch, please. Haha. Though I'm way stoked about MS this year. Excited to see Scorpio, and while I'm also salty about SB, Scalebound, Phantom Dust and Game Pass have been cool.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. So now we've got that Phantom Dust. I guess he tweeted that on the 24th. That's when Phantom Dust was out, right? On the 24th?
Yes.
Yeah, so thank you for that, Brondorf.
Indeed, thank you. We find ourselves in complete agreement.
And as everyone always, we love your feedbacks. We love your iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio ratings and reviews. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter. I was literally just looking at Twitter because we had that tweet.
I was literally just looking at Twitter because I was reading that tweet.
Yes.
You can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And our home base is gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org. I would like to shout out tonight to the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com.
More like the Voice of Giggles Network tonight.
Right. We stream over there, as well as some other fantastic shows like Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, Orange Aunt Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues, the Ranger Pridecast, which I record alongside Shane Alenko, talking about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series and the current season of the Super Sentai meta series, upon which it's based out of Japan. Last but not least, for the golden oldies of VOG, is the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. I'd be remiss not to mention our good friends over at Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, and their sister show X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You should also check out Slagkick's show, Reading is Fundamental.
Ooh, girl, library's open!
Where we, along with Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio and Delvin from VG Realness, talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Slaggy, take us to a hunty bunch.
Game Bar is
take it to the bridge.
Game Bar is the gay video game prairie home companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with VG Realness, serving up a dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, joystick jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them and are LGBTQ QTs. Big time. I'd also like to shout out to our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. I'd also like to shout out to our sister show, Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news, bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. Apologies for getting that episode out a little later this month than I had hoped, but excited to bring that to you. I'd also like to shout out to our other sister show, which is the Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast, or Stabcast for short, your twice monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon, which Spike and I do with Trainer Sulker. Our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They closed their doors quite a while back at this point, but we'll forever be shouting them out and pouring out a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain for their wonderful work.
All right, Game Boys, Game like Girls, and everyone not on a binary scale.
I've got to work on my Great Fairy Cackle, because I'm kind of doing more of a Link to the Past, Link's Awakening Witch, Mushroom Brew sort of thing.
So it's been a lovely episode tonight.
A Toadstool Mix is great for tricks.
Thank you so much for spending this lovely Friday evening with us. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. We will likely be back at you 7 days from now. You will listen in 7 days. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And terebi keshite.
So you know what bothers me about the Air Buddies franchise?
I'm so angry that you're about to say whatever you're about to say.
So like the Air Bud movies were about a dog that was really good at sports, who by the way was played by the dog who played Comet on Full House. But the Air Buddies like talk. But I don't think Air Bud talked. And you know what else bugs me?
What?
When actual, like, real animal actors have CGI mouths on them that move in a way that animal mouths cannot move, because animal mouths do not move the way that human mouths do.
What?
You've never seen, like...
No, I... Yeah.
You're just wondering why I'm talking about this on GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
News buddies. News Buddies, coming this summer on VOG Network.
Is that in association with Disney Channel original features?
Maybe we get on Disney XD if we're lucky.
Hey, we'll be right next to our beloved Pokemon. Okay, in your normal podcasting voice, speak in your mic for me.
I'm not touching it.
Brilliant, thank you. Do me a favor, Slagkick, speak in your mic for me.
Speak into your mic for me. Sorry, it's a little bit wobbly right now.
All right. Son of a bitch.
The thing that I did was the wind.
Ah! Alright. Son of a bitch.
The thing that I did was the wind.
Ah!